I'm going to speak tonight, this first full day of practice, about why we do this practice. Why are we doing this practice and the benefits that come forward with this practice? And I really appreciate the sense of Sangha already, that the sense that we're coming together in community and that we're truly supporting one another in this practice. And there's a real energetic feeling that I sense from being together this way. And we can continue to draw upon our Sangha, our community for this retreat, as a source of strength and support, even when we may hit some bumps in the road with our practice. Well, it's an interesting way of stepping out of the world. I usually begin a retreat by saying we're stepping out of the world, and we're kind of somewhat stepping out of the world. But it's a big thing to do to spend this time devoted to practice, even in this online format. A real commitment of the heart shows the power of our intentions to be present in the world with a more open, loving heart. And with this practice, too, we're coming into our own goodness, coming into our own good and goodness, perhaps coming into the fullness of who we are. And opening to all of the beautiful qualities of the heart that we've already been talking about and will continue to talk about in more detail in this time of practice. I was remembering my very first metta retreat. I mentioned that was in 2002. I hadn't been practicing very long. I'd been a few times at the end of the retreat, end of other retreats, I said the phrases. I had no idea coming into a metta retreat that I'd actually be practicing with repeating metta phrases for the whole 8 days. And that's what our instruction is going to be now, to begin to bring in both the intention to cultivate, incline the heart mind toward metta with the support of the metta phrases, a basic form of may I be safe, may I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. I tell you, actually, when I first heard that that's what we were going to be doing for 8 days on that very first metta retreat, I thought, oh no, I'll go crazy. I can't just repeat the same words every waking moment. But something happens, kind of magical, when we open our hearts. Practice inclining the heart and mind toward loving kindness. And there were a lot of challenges on that retreat, challenges many of you may face on this retreat. Almost all of us do. Challenges of practice, the waves of practice, where we may connect more deeply with the practice of metta as well. And by the end of the retreat, I felt like I'd fallen in love. I'd fallen in love with every single being on that retreat and all the beings on the land. Kind of felt like they were all family, but it was a healthy family. No attachments, no dysfunctions. It's the quality of loving kindness, unconditional friendliness, goodwill, without the complications of attachments. So, metta, just the Pali word of metta sounds beautiful to say. Metta, metta, metta. And even after doing that first retreat, I felt the power of the metta practice, but I had the misimpression that it was just this nice thing on the side. And the reality is, it's a key part of the practice on the Eightfold Path. The Buddha provided an eightfold path of practice, and metta shows up right there in wise intention, the second path factor. And wise intention includes the aspect of renunciation, letting go of attachments, letting go to needing things to be a particular way, kind of letting go of our attachment to preferences and what our experience should be like. In a sitting during this retreat. So we're bringing in this quality of letting go. could describe it as a deep acceptance of our experience just as it is. And the second aspect of wise intention is metta, quality of loving kindness, goodwill. So right there in the Eightfold Path. The third aspect of wise intention is compassion that we've already been bringing in. Compassion simply recognizes suffering, recognizes the suffering that is present in our own experience, recognizes suffering of others, and meets it with compassion. When we recognize suffering, when we open our hearts to suffering, naturally we wish it to end. That's the heart of compassion. And compassion is rooted in the intention of non-harming. And we've undertaken the precepts on this retreat. Beginning of the retreat, we'll probably recite the precepts again, the refuges and precepts again sometime during the retreat. Those precepts especially support the intention of non-harming. Non-harming through words, through speech, through actions. It supports a calming of the mind to support our practice of metta. And it supports a sense of inner harmony when we deeply cultivate this intention of non-harming. So metta is a key part of the practice on the Eightfold Path. And there's a beautiful quote I love to share from Dipa Ma on the difference between insight meditation and the metta practice. Just a little background, Dipa Ma was a lay practitioner in the late 1900s, known as being one of the most deeply realized beings in this lineage, and was a teacher to many teachers in our lineage here in the West. Quite an inspiring story about Dipa Ma her life and her teachings. Here's Dipa Ma's quote on the difference between insight meditation or mindfulness meditation and metta. From my experience, there is no difference. When you are fully loving, aren't you also mindful? And when you are fully mindful, is this not the essence of love? If our hearts are entirely open, our minds are clear. There's no confusion. And when mindfulness is fully present, there's a clear understanding of the way things are. Our hearts are entirely open, freed from all confusion. So, I'd like to share the story of the Buddha's first teaching on metta. It's a beautiful story. This is drawn from the commentaries that were written after the time of the Buddha, but reflected the original teachings offered by the Buddha. And in this first teaching, it was said that the Buddha sent a large number of renunciants, a particular group of renunciants, to practice for the rains retreat, the 3 month long retreat that all renunciants undertake each year. And this has been the case since the time of the Buddha. Sent them to the Himalayas in search of a place to practice for the 3 month period. And it was said that after receiving their instructions, they found a suitable place, a beautiful place at the foothills of the Himalayas. And it's described as, quote, appearing like a glittering blue quartz crystal. It was embellished with a cool, dense green forest grove and a stretch of ground strewn with sand, resembling a pearl net or a silver sheet, and was furnished with a clean spring of water. The practitioners or renunciants were captivated by the sight, and they had the good fortune to have neighboring villagers who were generous in offering support with food, helping to build a hut for each renunciant. And each renunciant was said to have a tree to practice under. So pretty ideal conditions. And in this story, it's said that the tree spirits of the land were initially very supportive of the monks in their practice. But then they grew resentful because the monks weren't leaving. And the tree spirits were said to feel like their space was being invaded. So, of course, it's not necessary for us to believe in tree spirits in this practice, but maybe you do. I like to think there are tree spirits that might be supporting my practice. So in this story, the tree spirits started creating frightening sounds, frightening sights, even bad odors to scare away the monks. And it was said that the monks were terrified and they felt they couldn't practice under the difficult conditions that were present. Like we might feel like our conditions aren't ideal either. Maybe hearing the sounds of someone else we share our living space with, or hearing the barking dog next door, or sound of TV stereos close by, we could think these aren't the ideal conditions. Well, part of the challenges we can all face in practice. I said these renunciants walked a long distance in to go to the Buddha and to say they couldn't continue the retreat, that the conditions weren't right, that they were terrified by what the tree spirits were doing. And the Buddha said, go back to the forest and practice there. And the renunciants pleaded, it's impossible. Please send us to another place. And in fact, they said, give us a do-over. Let us start all over again. If you just let us go to another place, we'll start the 3-month clock all over again. And the Buddha said, no, go back to the forest. And it took 3 times. It always takes 3 times in these stories. And on the 3rd time, the Buddha's response was, I will offer you a weapon of protection against the fear you're experiencing. The Buddha said, go back to the same spot. It is only by wise effort that you will effect the destruction of the inner taints, the forces that confuse the heart and mind, that prevent us from seeing clearly the way things are. The Buddha said, fear not. If you want to be free from the harassment caused by the tree spirits, learn this metta practice. And the Buddha said it will be a theme for meditation as well as a formula for protection. So as we undertake this practice, it's both the theme of our practice, staying with this intention, staying with the phrases, and it's a protection. It's a protection against being overwhelmed by fear or anger or difficult emotions that might arise. So both a theme and a protection. So the monks returned to the forest. And what the Buddha offered was an instruction for practice, not a magic pill. They didn't hear the Buddha's words and suddenly only feel metta. They had to practice, just like us. Like we can't just say, may metta now arise, and then our hearts are entirely open for the remainder of the retreat. We have to practice wisely. So no doubt in going back to the forest, they still experienced fear. They were probably still afraid of tree spirits, but they had the protection of metta and the theme of the practice. And we may feel fear or anger about things that happened in the past. We may feel anxiety about thoughts of the future. Just like the renunciants, we might have had a lot of sleepiness on this first day of the retreat, very common. Been practicing for 20 years and still the first couple days of the retreat, I need a little bit more extra sleep, take more naps than usual. So we need to take care of our bodies wisely. Renunciants probably experience the restlessness that most of us, most of us, probably all of us, have experienced restlessness, mind wandering off. And we just need to patiently, kindly come back to our practice. Maybe the renunciants, I imagine they experience doubt. Doubt in the practice. What is this new practice the Buddha has introduced and given to us? This is not what I'm used to doing. I'm not sure this is the right practice. That might have arisen for some of us too. Or maybe doubt, can I really do this practice? Or maybe doubt that maybe I should have gone to Lake Tahoe and gone hiking for 8 days rather than doing this practice. All forms of doubt that can pull us away from the practice. And we can recognize doubt is the very opposite of trust in the heart. Doubt is the very opposite of trust in the heart. So when we trust the heart, we trust our practice. We just come back to be in the body, to make the heart connection, to be with our simple phrases, our intentions. Just letting the practice do us. This is the trusting of the heart. So eventually for these renunciants, it was said that the sights and sounds and smells the tree spirits were creating no longer caused reactivity. And eventually the tree spirits joined in, supporting, and joined in the field of metta, supporting the monks. So the monks, those monks on that retreat, made every part of their experience throughout the day all about metta. I'd like to think that those renunciants were probably not only offering metta for themselves, for other beings, but they were offering metta to the tree spirits, to the trees, the sky, the land, everything they were seeing and knowing in their experience. And that's what we're suggesting you do here on this retreat. The monks developed great joy, calm, tranquility, and great equanimity. And as often the case, it's said that all 500 of the renunciants realized complete awakening by the end of the retreat. So there may be tree spirits, or maybe unseen spirits, as Bonnie mentioned this morning, that are supporting us in our practice. There are certainly many unseen spiritual forces, no question, supporting us beyond the teaching team, Christina is assisting, and Mercy providing the Qigong instructions. There's staff you don't see who are on our calls, supporting our Zoom calls. There's many staff on the land at Spirit Rock who are supporting our retreats, who are really behind us, kind of unseen spiritual forces, all the people who support Spirit Rock. So a lot of support we can draw upon with a sense of gratitude and appreciation for our week of practice. So, metta, so many words to describe it that we use, and one particular term may resonate more than others for you. Basic friendliness, kindness, goodwill, loving kindness. I like the term that Ayakema used. Ayakema was a Buddhist nun in our lineage. And her language is that metta is pure love. I really like that definition, pure love. Pure love has no wish to hold and to keep, but is simply given freely. That's the essence of metta. Pure love that has no wish to hold and to keep. So it is different than the love we feel for a partner, spouse, child, parent, even a close friend. We naturally feel some kind of attachment, right? Because we're getting and giving something in our relationships. So there is some kind of a some kind of a natural attachment in those relationships. So that's the distinction between metta and the love we feel for a partner or spouse. I've been with my partner, my husband, for 27 years, and there are attachments in the relationship. We're supporting one another. But we are both practitioners, and we both bring forward metta into our practice, and we brought more metta into our relationship. So there's kind of a lot less holding on around the small stuff in our relationship as a result of bringing more metta into the relationship as well. So we're cultivating a basic sense of warmth, of kindness, of caring that begins to open up unconditionally, boundlessly toward all beings, this pure love. And of course, it's not about changing others. It's most of all about the work within, opening our own hearts. As we begin to expand the circle to other beings, it won't be that we're trying or looking for an outcome. There's an attachment level there. So we'll be staying with the one category to begin with for a little bit, as Sally introduced this afternoon in the 2:30 sit, and I'll reinforce that at the 7:30 sit tonight, and again, or the 7 o'clock sit tonight, and again in the instructions tomorrow morning. The easy category being self, or an easy being, perhaps a benefactor, a pet, a teacher, someone you can make an easy connection to. So we choose either self or an easy being, another easy being, and just stay with that one, whichever one we can feel the easier connection for. And just repeating the metta phrases. The simple form that I use now, I didn't used to use a simple version, but the simple version is, may I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I be with ease. The universal wish of every being. And we'll begin over the course of this week, we'll begin to expand gradually to make sure to include self, if that's not our easy being, and then to begin to expand outwards to a good friend, to a neutral being, someone we recognize but don't know well, to a difficult being, and then ultimately to all beings without exception. It is like planting seeds as we say the phrases. Maybe through the day, we might just drop in the words. As we're engaged in activities, cooking dinner, we might just drop in the words. Safe, happy, healthy, ease. Just like just scattering those seeds, as Sally suggested this afternoon. Just keep staying with the words, the phrases, the intention. And we're not trying to make anything happen. And we're not attaching to that. May that seed bloom. We're just dropping the seeds, letting the practice unfold in its own way. Not looking for anything particular to manifest. So at times we may feel no connection with the metta practice and the phrases. I'm sure during the day, every one of us had times when we weren't connecting to metta. Maybe a sense of dullness. Maybe the feeling of exactly the opposite. Maybe feeling ill will, which is the opposite of metta. Part of the purification process. Maybe we feel some sense of metta coming forward, but it's very gentle, just a slight sense of warmth, of connection. And other times it might be very big and strong. Just part of the waves of practice. We don't need to judge or tell ourselves any story about how it's unfolding. Truly, the best thing we can do with our practice is just to trust the heart. They're bringing an attitude of deep acceptance to the present moment experience, to be patient, to really be patient with the unfolding process. Trying to make anything happen with a practice doesn't work. I can tell you from many years of experience, it's futile. It works against the practice. We'll be opening and stretching the heart in this week of practice, like a gradual opening, stretching of the heart, finding a greater capacity of the heart, maybe even a greater courage to be present. The Buddha describes it this way: develop a mind so filled with love that it resembles space. We create more space. We create more space for healing, purification, opening of the heart, for clarity to arise. A beautiful aspect of metta is that it can penetrate even difficult mind states. So, even the difficult mind states, even when strong fear is present or strong aversion is present, we have the protection of metta. So just an example from my own life on how I've used metta practice. I was a hospice volunteer for 14 years, and a very important part of my practice, and many, many, many great teachers who I was bedside with at the end of their lives, real, real great teachers for my practice, beautiful teachers. I remember especially the first 6 months of hospice volunteer work. I'd been already started practicing this practice of meditation and knew and had been on the metta retreat. But those first 6 months I was a volunteer in hospice, almost every time I walked in the door, the feeling was of anxiety. I'm not good enough. So both anxiety and doubt. I'm not good enough. I can't do this work. I'm not good enough to be a volunteer. Who am I to do this? Fear and anxiety. I knew the practice. Okay, I'll sit down. Before I enter into any room, I'll sit down and do metta, offer metta for myself. It's where the metta was needed. The Buddha said, no one more deserving of our love and affection than we are ourselves. So I started offering metta for myself. I didn't really need to turn toward and examine the anxiety or the doubt. I could just offer metta. That was enough, kind of a healing ointment for it to drop away. Then with a heart softened, heart having a sense of being opened up, then I could enter into the rooms of people at the end of their lives. I could be present, could be more fully present with some basic sense of kindness. It wasn't always perfect, but there was some opening of the door for me to be present, coming into the rooms of the residents at the end of their lives. It was really amazing to see the power of how all of the beautiful qualities of the heart could come forward. I think it was Bonnie who said, metta is the foundation for the other Brahma Viharas. With the intention of kindness, compassion could so easily arise. Just seeing the suffering, maybe the physical discomfort, mental discomfort, when we're fully present, compassion just naturally arises, kind of like the malleability of the heart when we're open and present with the heart of metta. And mudita, in just 1 second, could switch. Notice a moment of feeling some sense of compassion, the door opens, another volunteer brings in a tray of food, the resident's happy to see the food, some sense of joy and happiness. Mudita, supportive joy, just like that. Hearts can be so open and responsive when we're fully present. And from that foundation of loving kindness, if our hearts are open, if we're present, the opportunities for mudita are endless, because we can so easily see the joy of others and wish that joy to continue. And equanimity, the fourth divine abode, the fourth beautiful quality of the heart, the calm, peaceful acceptance of things as they are. It's like this now and I care. A balanced, spacious quality of the heart that can hold all of the joys and sorrows in balance. Just to say at the end of my hospice shift, and it did fade away. That anxiety took about 6 months for that anxiety started to fade away and coming into my shift. But even in the first week, I never felt any anxiety at the end of the shift. Never felt any real disturbance. I actually felt a great peace in having been more fully present with the foundation of loving kindness. Sense of peace and groundedness. So I'm just taking a deep breath and reconnecting in the body. I like to kind of have a sense of feeling the heart center as a way of connecting to metta. So I'm connecting to that in this moment. Appreciating the way that metta and this practice has supported me in coming to a full acceptance of who I am, coming into my own goodness, starting to get past those habitual feelings of not good enough that I mentioned a few minutes ago. We come into our own goodness. We see the beautiful qualities of our own hearts. This is a quote from Walt Whitman, great poet of the late 1800s. I am larger and better than I thought. I did not know I held so much goodness. All seems beautiful to me. Whoever denies me, it shall not trouble me. Whoever accepts me, he, she, they shall be blessed and shall bless me. And the they pronoun was actually not used in the time of Walt Whitman, but he was a pretty out gay poet in the 1800s. And I think he would have appreciated and supported the use of the they pronoun. I love the logic there that he followed, that in recognizing his own goodness, then he could see that all seems beautiful, kind of like the world opens up. When we bring the metta for ourselves, heart opens up, all seems beautiful. Whoever denies me that, it shall not trouble me. Whoever accepts me, he, she, they shall bless me. Our practice is, I said earlier, to open our hearts unconditionally, boundlessly to all beings. There's a beautiful expression of this from His Holiness the Dalai Lama. His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and I think now is 81 years old. Of course, the Dalai Lama was the head of state and the spiritual leader of Tibet. Remains the spiritual leader of Tibet. But in 1959, so he was head of state and spiritual leader at the age of 19. Can you imagine? Age of 19, the Chinese government took his country and he had to flee to Dharamsala in India and has never been able to return to Tibet since that time. You can imagine so easily someone like that could be filled with resentment, with hate. And yet, with his practice, with the wisdom that's come forward in his practice, he's been this force of love and compassion in the world. And this quote from him about his attitude toward the senior government officials of China, he calls them my friends, the enemy. I can feel the truth, that that's the truth in his words, my friends, the enemy. That he really does feel loving kindness, truly, even to the senior Chinese government officials who took his own country. So, with our practice, there's a purification of the heart. There's a purification of the heart, and there's purification of understanding that I'll speak to. Purification of the heart will happen for many of us in the form of healing, kind of a cleansing, a purifying. This doesn't happen for everyone and may come more so for those at the beginning of practice, but can still happen many, many years into practice, where memories from 20, 30, 40 years ago can come back of some harm, maybe some very small harm we caused or something done to us that was harmful. And there's a need to kind of open to it, or as our hearts open up in the space of loving kindness, we open to that, we make room for the healing. So this is part of what may come up with the practice. And these are times where we may feel the opposite. We may really feel strong emotions of anger or fear. And to know that the healing will happen with love. It's like our body system seems to know that intuitively. Often it's said that love fights hatred, but the truth is love loves. Love, love, love loves everything. And so love is like the healing ointment for the hatred. And the Buddha said, hatred never ceases by hatred. Hatred is healed by love alone. This is the eternal law. So even when we feel difficult emotions, difficult memories, keep bringing the intention of metta. Even when we feel body pain, invite a sense of sending metta to that part of the body, not having any outcome that we're looking for, just an offering. We don't usually do that. Usually when we feel pain, we judge it or we push it away or we get upset. We can practice here with bringing loving kindness to that part of the body, to our hearts and minds when we're feeling pain. We meet reality, whatever it might be, with love. Words of James Baldwin, I know that people can be better than they are. We are capable of bearing a greater burden once we discover that the burden is reality and arrive where reality is. So the heart stretches open. We find a greater resiliency. We keep turning back, returning to our practice of metta. Even mind wanders again and again, very natural. Come back patiently, reconnect in the body, maybe touch the heart as I like to do, and begin with our phrases again. Remember one time in the hospice volunteer work, a new resident had come in and was really struggling, more kind of a psychological struggling. And a nurse that I was close to, we both looked at each other and we both looked like, what can we do? And then we both said, say metta. Say metta. It's like the words, key words for our retreat. Say metta. Right? Words for the whole of our lives. So a beautiful expression and coming into our own goodness and coming into kind of a flowering of who we are. This is a poem from Galway Canal, part of the poem that many of you may have heard. The bud stands for all things, even for those things that don't flower, for everything flowers from within a self-blessing. Though sometimes it is necessary to reteach a thing its loveliness, to put a hand on its brow of the flower and retell it in words and in touch. It is lovely until it flowers again from within of self-blessing. Who can imagine that kind of offering as we offer metta for ourselves? And connect with that universal wish of all beings. Really come into the complete interconnectedness, the reality of the way things are, the complete interconnectedness of life. So it is, as Sally said this afternoon, we're cultivating and inclining the heart and mind. It's a cultivation practice. We can't make it happen. We're just cultivating and inclining the heart and mind. And ultimately, we find that this quality of metta And the divine abodes, you could say, are innate to our own hearts. It's just that the clouds of confusion are covering us up. Because we see into our goodness, we see these pure qualities of the heart are already here. You could say they're innate qualities of awareness itself. And from Mingyur Rinpoche, all that we're looking for in life, all the happiness, contentment, peace of mind is right here in the present moment. Coming right here in the present moment to see these beautiful qualities that are already here. So just a few comments on the purification of understanding that comes forward, that aspect of purification. See that metta is a natural condition of our hearts, that our hearts and minds are inherently clear, pure, radiant. Nothing lacking in our own hearts. Nothing lacking in this present moment. When the forces of confusion lift, our hearts and minds are open, clear, naturally responsive. We begin to see that the clouds that pass overhead, the clouds of fear, anger, sadness, grief, just clouds passing overhead. We find a greater capacity of heart to be present with this practice. Greater capacity of the heart to be present even with difficulties and challenges of life. Opening our hearts widely to all the joys and sorrows of life and their vast interconnectedness. And we find it's possible to be present in the world with a much more open heart than we might have thought possible. Great benefit, great beauty of the practice. I'd like to share the 11 benefits of metta that the Buddha identified. And we may touch on these again later on the retreat. Buddha identified 11 benefits of metta. You will sleep easily. And I'll just put in the parenthetical there. As part of the healing purification process, sometimes we actually, with the practice of metta, may have some unusual dreams. And we may not feel we sleep peacefully, but ultimately it leads in the direction of more peaceful sleep. I often will say metta when I wake up in the night, unable to sleep. So you will sleep easily. You will walk easily. I do find, I say metta on my long walks sometimes. I feel a greater ease, a lightness in my step, actually. You will have pleasant dreams. People will love you. I tend to smile a lot when I'm saying metta on my walks, and I get a lot of friendly smiles back. People often think I must know them because I'm smiling at them. So people will love you. Devas and animals will love you. Animals do have that sense. Devas, this is spiritual forces or devas. Spiritual forces will protect you. External dangers, poisons, weapons, and fires will not harm you. Your face will be radiant. Your mind will be serene. You will die unconfused. And you will be reborn in happy realms. And you can take just a moment to reflect. I like to do this sometimes to kind of turn it around, remembering that ill will is the opposite of metta. And when one's heart is filled with ill will, one doesn't sleep easily. There's a heaviness to our walking. Even animals can sense the ill will. There's no protection. We can see it in the world leaders who cause harm, who engage in wars. They're in danger. They're in physical danger. So 11 benefits. I'll just repeat those. We'll sleep easily, walk easily, have pleasant dreams. People will love you. Spiritual forces and animals will love you. Spiritual forces will protect you. External dangers will not harm you. Your face will be radiant. Your mind will be serene. You will die unconfused, and you will be reborn in happy realms. And finally, I just want to share this little bit of a story quote from Louis Armstrong. I particularly love the song that he performed, one of his signature songs, What a Wonderful World. Many of you may know the song, What a Wonderful World. There's a little bittersweet quality of feeling the pain of the world, but in the song, he always sings to the beauty of the world. But seemingly aware that there is suffering. And this is a quote, as I was taking a walk just 3 days ago, I decided to pull up the songs. I could listen to this song, get some inspiration for teaching on this retreat. I pulled up this song, and it was from a recording in 1970, one of his last performances before he died, a live recording. And he starts before the song by saying, some of you young folks have been saying to me, hey, Pops, his good friends called him Pops. Hey, Pops, what do you mean, what a wonderful world? What about all the moors all over the place? You call them wonderful? And how about hunger and pollution? You call them wonderful? And then Louis Armstrong said, well, how about listening to old Pops? Seems to me it ain't the world that's so bad, but what we're doing to it. All I'm saying is see what a wonderful world it would be if only we gave love a chance. Love, baby, love. That is a secret. If lots more people loved each other, we'd solve lots more problems. And then this world would be a better place. This is what old Pops is saying. So let's sit for, we have about 10 more minutes before our time ends. Thank you for your time and attention for the talk, and we'll just reconnect with our practice, reconnect with the body, feeling the body resting on the earth, here and now. Inviting a sense of ease, and a sense of being relaxed in the body, even as the spine is upright, a sense of relaxed dignity, kindness to this body. Feel the breath. The body, maybe you feel the heart center and the center of the chest. Maybe a sense of breathing in kindness, breathing out a sense of relaxing, letting go. Simple intention of metta. And you can invite in the phrases that perhaps you're trying out, perhaps phrases you already prefer to use with your easy being, yourself, another being. Perhaps first connecting with a image of that being, making a heart connection, seeing that a visual image, maybe appreciating your own good qualities of being kind, caring for loved ones, or that quality in the other being. Qualities of generosity, patience, sense of humor, dedication to this practice. The tools of connecting with the image or these good qualities of the being you're offering praises for. And just beginning to incline heart and mind toward metta with the offering of the phrases. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. Kind, gentle offering. And may you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. Using your own words. Going at your own speed. I like to keep maybe 20% of the attention in the body and the heart center as a connection point. Whatever works for you. Always returning patiently, kindly to the body after the mind is wandered. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. Trust in the heart, trust in the practice. the encouragement to really begin to bring these phrases into the practice and could use these tools of really starting with a body connection, feeling the earth, inviting kindness, feeling the breath body experience, sense of being at ease, even if as we're alert. And use those tools. You can try out using images. You could try out connecting maybe with some experience where you can really make the heart connection with the person you're offering metta for, perhaps yourself. And to bring in this attitude of acceptance and patience as we cultivate metta. And mind will undoubtedly get lost in thought. Just return, maybe to pause, reconnect to the body, feel the heart center before beginning your phrases again. So you can look at the sheet that we've given to help identify the phrases you might want to use, you connect with. I'll say a little bit more about phrases tomorrow morning. And encourage you, if you can, to join the 7 o'clock sit for the chanting and I'll provide some more support for the practice of metta with phrases tonight and share a poem, favorite poem from Mary Oliver. So much gratitude for your first day of practice. The first day of practice can be quite challenging, and you can take a moment to just appreciate with gratitude for yourself, your commitment to staying with this day of practice. Well.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.